Yes. Hey, it's great to have you here this morning. My name's Kurt. Now, how about PJ and the band bringing it this morning? Great job. Man, you guys get awesome music every single weekend. And, that's what we're doing. We're trying to awaken our soul. And we're in this thing called a journey, as Eric said. And we're looking at how God is calling us to do increasingly more to maximize not only what we're doing now, but continue to reach and create spiritual freedom all around us that bleeds into other parts of the world as well. And one of the things we're asking, one of the questions we're asking during this journey of people who call this place home is, what does it look like? What is God calling me to do in the giving nature above and beyond what I currently do over the next 3 years towards some of the initiatives of continuing to create freedom for people around us and throughout the world on the spiritual level? And we're talking about money, and there's something very, very healthy about talking about the spiritual power of money in our lives. In fact, Jesus talked regularly about this. Jesus talked about money more than he talked about prayer and faith combined. In fact, if you take the times Jesus talked about faith and prayer and add them up in the Bible and then multiply by 20, you begin to get close to the amount of times Jesus talked about possessions and money. So today we're looking at how money has this ability to kind of woo us to trust in it more than God. And so we're in this journey, and there's really three processes in this journey that we're going after that Eric mentioned a moment ago. I'll share them with you again. It's surrender, and then we're going to listen, and then we're going to do whatever God is asking us to do. And so we're going to be looking at these over the next few weeks, and today we're going to talk about surrender. And we're going to do that by looking at a story that Jesus told in the Bible. We find it in Matthew chapter 25. And this is one of his teachings on money. And so you'll be able to track along on the screens. If you want to follow along in the CrossPoint app, you can hit the Bible button. It'll take you right to Matthew 25. And Jesus talked about this particular story two different ways that are recorded in the Bible. And this just tells me that this was kind of like one of Jesus' go-to stories when it came to possessions, when it came to the things that we have entrusted to us, and what it means to surrender to him. And so I'm just going to read it for you. You can follow along. Matthew 25, beginning with verse 14. It says this. It says, "For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property." Now this is a parable right here. These parables are stories Jesus made up. I want to do a series sometime called The Things Jesus Made Up. All right, it'd be a lot of fun, right? So this is one of the things Jesus made up. These are stories that aren't true, but they're true to life because it gives Jesus the ability to make a point. And so he's teaching a spiritual principle here, and he starts off right away by saying there was a man who goes away, and we always have to figure out, okay, who are the characters in these stories Jesus makes up? So the man that goes away is the character figure of God, and then he says he basically entrusts everything that he has while he's away to a bunch of ordinary people, which represents you and me in the story. All right, and so the first thing I want us to see is that God entrusts everything you and I have, everything that you and I have in our possession, enjoy every day, actually comes from God. I'll tell you what, this is a game changer right here. The moment we begin to understand this principle, our life begins to look totally different. Game changer moment. When we begin to understand and live out of the belief and the understanding that everything that I have actually has been entrusted to me by God. I was in a conversation a week or so ago with somebody who knew we were in a campaign. And I said, hey, how's the campaign going? I said, oh, great. Doing well, tracking well. He said, well, good. Well, how are you doing? I said, fine. I'm doing really good. He's like, no, I mean the campaign. Like, how much money are you bringing in? I'm like, geez, I don't think we brought anything in yet. We haven't even asked for any money yet. We're not even to that point yet. And he was blown away by this. And as I thought through that, I thought, well, you know, the way the nonprofit world works is you always go out and get lead gifts. You know, somebody that has a lot of jack that can give a lead gift and maybe even make it a matching gift. Say, hey, somebody came forward and is going to give a huge gift if, you know, we can match it, the rest of us. And really, that's kind of a ploy to try to get us to give more than we normally would give. And what it really says is there's one person or two people that really, you know, bring the thing and make it happen, and the rest of us peons just kind of do what we can, you know, if we can. And I thought about that, and I thought, well, that's the way the game's normally played, but that's not how we're playing this game. You know, that's not what we're doing here. We're not even accepting gifts yet. There's a lot of work we need to do to kind of figure out some foundations that are key because we're on a journey. In fact, March 13th is commitment weekend. And so, you know, if you're looking for, okay, when do we do that? That's March 13th. Up to that point, we're laying a framework, things that we've got to get down in order to be obedient to what God is calling us to. And the first thing is to surrender, and part of that surrendering is accepting and understanding that everything that I have is entrusted by God. About 18 years ago, Julie and I were going out for our second anniversary, I believe it was, and that was a game-change moment for us. Not because this is our second anniversary, but something happened while we were out at dinner that night, totally changed my life, I think Julie's life, our perspective on things that we have. We were going to this little tavern called Bongi's. Maybe you've heard of it, Bongi's Tavern. Great little hole in the wall. And one of my friends had told me about it. He said, man, Kurt, when you pull up, don't leave without going in. He said, you're going to pull up and feel like, man, this is a hole in the wall. Let me find a nice place to take my wife. And he was right. It was phenomenal, phenomenal food. It's become one of our favorite spots. And so, you know, we go in, we get a table, and we were planning to spend, you know, quite a bit more than we normally do as our anniversary, so more than a normal dinner out. And I think we spent somewhere around $80 to $100 that night, which was a lot for us then. Man, that's a lot for us now to spend on a dinner. But it was on our anniversary, and so, you know, we ordered, you know, appetizers and soup and, you know, entree, and her dessert was phenomenal. I had this, you know, blueberry cream, cream pie cheesecake is phenomenal. And while we were sitting there, we saw some friends of ours sitting a few tables down by the name of Randy and Joy. Their kids were in our student ministry at the time. And we went over and talked to them. They were having some kind of celebration. I think one of their kids was graduating. And, you know, we went on with our evening, got to the end of the night, and we're kind of ready to go. And we said to our waitress, hey, we're ready to go. And she said, great, enjoy your night. So, well, what about the bill? She said, oh, there's no bill for you tonight. I'm like, well, I spent $100. There should be a bill. Apparently, I need to come back here more often. And, you know, and then I realized, oh, my word, I bet our friends, Randy and Joy, paid for our dinner. And it blew me away. Absolutely leveled me. I don't think to that point in my life as like a 25-year-old, I had ever experienced that kind of generosity from anybody other than maybe a family member, you know, out of obligation at Christmas. Blew me away. So I remember going and seeing Randy at church, you know, one of the upcoming weekends, and they attend here now, which is kind of a really cool thing. And I went up to Randy and said, hey, you didn't need to do that. And that was one of the most spiritually forming things that he said to me right there. He said, Kurt, he said, I know we didn't, but he's like, hey, it's all God's. We just get to redistribute it. Blew me away. Changed the way I view things that I have. This idea of everything that I have is just an opportunity to redistribute what God has given to me. This is what this story is about. We have these guys who get things from the owner. Here's how it continues. It says, to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more, but he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them, and he who had received 5 talents came forward bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. So there's 5 talents, there's 2 talents, and there's 1 talent. What we learn from this is the second thing, that God entrusts unequally. God entrusts unequally. All right, and what I have to do is I have to surrender, and I have to realize of everything that I own, I have there's a moment of spiritual sanity where I recognize everything that I have, I need to bring onto the table and just acknowledge that this is all a gift from God. And so I have with me right here, this is my bag that I carry around every week with all the things that are important to me to get my work done. And I've got some of my possessions, things that are valuable to me that I just need to put on the table. And so one of those things, first and foremost, is this is a brick that represents my house. You know, my house is something God has entrusted me to. It's not mine. I mean, it's now when I surrender that and put it on the table, that doesn't mean I lose it. Hopefully I don't lose it. Yeah, that just means that I acknowledge, I have a moment of spiritual sanity of saying, God, you actually gave this to me. Right? I didn't make the brick. I didn't make the wood. I didn't, you know, the money that funded our house. When Julie and I got the house, I remember us both saying, man, God has given us a place that's really for his blessing and benefit, for other people. That's what our home's for. And so, you know, this was God's money. Oh, my dog Minnie, my black lab Minnie is God's dog. Thank God it's his. Because, you know, Minnie, she likes to chew on God's furniture in God's house. That's what she does. I sit in it, she chews on it. And so, but we actually have a really good dog. Minnie is a great dog. She's a year-old black lab, and she's a great blessing to our family. There's only one thing. One thing is she has this problem that we've discovered about 6 months ago that it's called, I'd never heard of it before. It's called submissive urination. And anybody ever heard of submission urination before? Yeah, which means that every time, I didn't know that's what it's called. I thought she just got excited and peed on the floor. No, people come to our door for the first time. She drops a puddle to show them that she's not aggressive. She's submissive. And she pees right on the floor. But you know what? It's not my floor. It's God's floor. So I'm like, all right, she pees on God's floor. You know, and this is something I've been trying to teach to my kids for years, all right? I've been trying to help them see. Julie and I have realized if we can teach our kids two things, man, life will be downhill for them. First thing is if we can teach them the centrality of Jesus, if they can have a healthy understanding of who Jesus is, you know, they will be set for some good things in life. And if we can help them understand how to handle money instead of money handling them, then they'll be good. All right, so understand the centrality of Jesus, that the idea of God in the flesh, he came to rescue and save them. He's their savior, and them understanding that money is a tool that God has given them to be a blessing to others. Man, life will be downhill. In fact, I've even done some things. Each of my kids, when they were younger, I'd take them to like McDonald's, order them a Happy Meal. They love Happy Meals. And they'd just sit there and they'd munch on the fries like a little rabbit, you know. And I'd reach over and I'd just take a few of those fries and I'd go. And they'd look at me and they're like, oh, my fries. I'm like, really? Did you grow those fries? No. Did you buy those fries? No, those are my fries. I'm like, well, man, I thought I bought those fries. Actually, those are God's fries. God gives, God takes away. I'll take the whole thing. Just throw it out. And they're like, you know. And aren't you glad that I'm not the parent of your kids? You know? Actually, every single one of my kids, I don't know that I did this with Meredith. I think Meredith has something coming to her this week. This just reminded me, I need to do this with Meredith. See, I want my kids to understand everything that comes to them. I want them to loose things in their hands that they think is theirs and say, oh, this is actually from the hand of God, from the hand of God. See, God has entrusted me with a whole lot. He's entrusted me with my accounts, my checking account, my savings account, my retirement account, Julie's retirement account. These are all things we put on the table and say, in a moment of spiritual sanity, God, these are yours. They're not ours. You just entrusted these to us. Things like my iPhone. You know, I love my iPhone, but this is God's. It's a tool God has entrusted to me. My MacBook Pro. This is actually CrossPoint's MacBook Pro that God has given CrossPoint for me to utilize. That, you know, that's something that's not mine. It's just something I use. It's on the table. You know, I have things like my cars. You know, enjoy my cars. God, we feel like God's provided our cars. There are things that when we go through this process, we say, God, those are on the table. I mean, if you want me to downsize and show me a better car that I can, you know, redistribute some of what I'm doing right now into kingdom stuff, great. It's on the table. These are my sunglasses. These represent my vacation interests. You know, I love sitting out in the sun. And in fact, we have a vacation club that was given to us a few years ago, very generously from a family member. And that's on the table. We realized, man, that was a gift. That's just something God has given and blessed us with. And so we realize all these things are things that we need to acknowledge that have come from God and need to be on the table. God entrusts unequally. Some of you are thinking, well, I don't have a vacation interest. Well, God gave me certain things that you don't have. Guess what? I'm pretty confident there's certain things in your life that God has given you that I don't have. And see, we have to realize this. And some of us, we're like, well, man, I work hard for what I have. Everything I own is mine. I mean, I worked hard for this. I sweat and work. And maybe. I mean, who gave you, you know, the drive to accomplish what you accomplish? I mean, why do you have maybe more drive than somebody else that came out of the same family? You know, who gave you the ability to crunch numbers the way that you do? I mean, maybe you have an ability to crunch numbers in a way nobody else does. Who gave you your ability in sales? I mean, if you're in sales and you're an extrovert, man, you need to thank God that he wired you that way. I mean, you probably do really well because God wired you that way. Who gave you the ability to learn the math tables, you know, faster than anybody else? See, God has uniquely wired you in certain ways. And so, yeah, you might be at the front of making some of it happen, but God has brought this to you. I know when I look at what I do and the things God's brought me into, I think, man, I don't deserve this stuff. I mean, I wake up here sometimes, I think, why am I here at Crosspoint as the lead guy? I mean, it's like I fell off a log and hit my head, and I just woke up, and here I am, loving my job and enjoying what I get to do. I mean, I think regularly, I'm like, man, there are tons more people more qualified than me. Why me? Definitely people that use less inappropriate humor than I do. Why me? I don't know. I don't know. That's just the way God is. I look at some of you, and I think, why'd you get the good knees and good back? I don't know. I threw my back out this week. I've been in pain all week. Doing a little better right now, so don't like boo-hoo for me or anything. But yeah, I have bad knees. I've had both meniscuses repaired. Still get inflamed. I'm starting running again and doing it very, very cautiously because I'm trying to not get inflamed knees so I can stay fit. And you know, I'm probably not going to be running any half marathons like I used to. And here's the thing. You know, I look at some of you and you don't care about running at all. You know, all you want to do is like sit in front of the TV. Just put me in front of the TV. Why'd God give you the good back so you can sit in front of the TV? I don't know. It's because he gives unequally. That's why. He just gives unequally. My word, how could I forget this? My family. You know, God has entrusted my family to me. Some of these people that are near and dear to my heart. See, here's the thing. When we look at these things, our possessions, our family, anything that God has entrusted to us. See, this right here is the posture of spiritual sanity, where I say, God, these are in my hands, open-handed. I place them on the table. I bring them out into the open. I'm not hiding anything. I'm just acknowledging that everything I have has come from you, which is a very different posture than what the world teaches us, which is the default posture of, it's mine. I'm going to hide it. God, don't look at the car I drive. You know, it's mine. This is mine. See, when we're in the posture, the default posture, we're not in a posture to relinquish, and we're not in a posture to receive more. You know, my family, this is kind of a hard one right here. Because I love my kids, my four kids, I love my wife dearly. And yet I realize very, very clearly and openly, these are not mine. I don't own them. They've been entrusted into my care. In fact, some of the most difficult moments over 20 years of ministry has been burying other people's kids. And, you know, you just don't plan to bury your kids. You really don't. And I've noticed, I've watched parents go through this process, deal with it in different ways. And one of the things I've noticed, I don't know that you ever fully get over that. I really don't. But one of the things I've noticed is that those that are able to eventually go on and recapture joy, it's because they've taken the posture of saying, God, my family, they're not mine. Not my wife, not my kids. Ultimately, they're your responsibility. You've entrusted them to me. And God, if you want to bring me more, awesome. If you want to take away, I'm going to have to figure out how to deal with that, but I'm open and surrendered to you. And you know what else I've noticed? I've noticed all this stuff right here. This is all extra, by the way. Everything on the table is extra. Well, how do I know it's extra? You might be thinking, well, that's not extra. That's important stuff. Well, it is important, but you know how I know it's extra? Because there's nothing on this table that's about sustaining my life. There's no basic food on this table. There's no basic clothing on this table. You know, some of you might be thinking, well, man, I don't have extra. Well, you sure do. I mean, you probably went to the closet this morning. You're like, man, I don't have anything to wear this morning. You know, and you know, your spouse is like, what are you talking about? You got like a whole room lined up clothes. And what you should have said is, I don't have anything that makes me feel good to wear today. See, so many times we're like, well, I don't have anything. And then all of a sudden, you go on like a Spread Some Cheer meal box drop down in Indianapolis, and you drop one of our Christmas boxes at somebody's house, and you open the door, and you see that they've got like one chair in their front room. Looks like nobody's living there. And you walk away, and you go, oh, my word. Apparently, I have a lot of extra in my life. I have probably more than 95% of people in the world. And so, and make no mistake about it, you know, there's always people that have more than us, always. But if you live in America, you have extra. We have extra. And see, the amazing thing about all this is God gives unequally, but he also gives generously. I mean, he gives generously. He always gives to us more than what we're currently using. You probably have things in your possession currently that you're not using and that God has entrusted to you. You know, this is how the story goes. We have somebody that gets 5 talents, somebody gets 2 talents, somebody gets 1 talent. What is a talent? A talent is a weight of measurement. So 1 talent equals 6,000 denarii. All right. Now, there used to be a phrase that we're back in these days, people would say another denarii, another day, another denarii, which meant that a denarii was the equivalent of a laborer, a day laborer's wages. All right, so somebody who's entrusted 5 talents times 6,000 denarii means they have 30,000 days wages that they've been entrusted with. You know, somebody that has 2 talents means they have 12,000 denarii that they've been entrusted with. Let me give you a perspective, 32 years of wages that's been entrusted to that person. Somebody with 1 talent, 6,000 denarii, which means 16 plus years of wages entrusted to them. So, I mean, even the one that has 1, even the one that's like, man, I got the least of the whole bunch, man, it's very, very generous. And when this happens, what God does next is he holds him accountable. It says, his master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of the master. Third thing, God holds all trustees accountable. God holds all trustees accountable. See, a trustee, if we don't own anything, if everything that we enjoy and experience is a gift that's been given to us by God, that makes us stewards, which eventually leads to us just being trustees of what's in our possession. And God says, I'm going to hold you accountable on this. Now, some of us, when we hear the word accountable, we're like, oh man, God's going to like slap me upside the back of the neck and hold me accountable, knock me off my stool. You know, probably not. I mean, we have this weird idea of accountability. Accountable means God's eventually you're going to have a conversation with your creator. You know, at the end of your life, you're going to have a conversation with your creator, and he's going to want an account on everything that he gave into your possession for you as a trustee. How did you leverage and use and enjoy that and use that to be a blessing to others? That's what an accountable conversation looks like. And that's why many of us just want a number. We're just like, well, what's my number? What's my number? I want to know it. If we're talking about what am I giving above me, I just give me a number. Well, it's not that easy. See, we're in a journey here, all right? We're going through the hard process of putting all of this on the table and saying, God, if this is everything you've entrusted to me, you know, I need to go through the process of recognizing that this all has actually come from you. And then we're going to say, God, is there anything on this table you want back? Anything that you want me to redirect that you've entrusted to me into other initiatives? Is there anything you want dibs on before it even comes back on the table? This is what it looks like to be fully surrendered. Now, you know, for some of us, our assumption is, man, if I get fully surrendered, man, if I really engage in this journey and fully put everything on the table, man, God would strip me naked. You know what would happen? It'd be like I'm living in a van down by the river. Yes, that's what would happen. God would strip me naked. I'd just maybe have a loincloth. And he'd send me to Zimbabwe, you know, for the rest of my life. Well, you know, and if you think that way of God, let me just ask you a question. Where does that understanding of God come from for you? Right, where have you gotten this idea that the closer I get to God, man, he's just going to abuse me and just strip me naked? I mean, where do we get this idea that God's anti me having nice stuff? He's not. He's just anti nice stuff having me. See, this is fascinating because, you know, God, accountability is God's just saying, hey, no, I've entrusted you with a lot. I just want to know if you're enjoying it and if you're leveraging all that I've given you. See, the guy with 5 talents, he creates 5 more out of what he's been given. And his master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of the master. Same thing happened with guy number 2. He gets 2 talents. He reproduces 2 more. And his master says, well done. You are good and faithful. Well done. Number 4, you're a good and faithful trustee. And good and faithful trustees provide a return. See, good and faithful trustees don't just buff and wax and save and store and put away in a savings place and, you know, buff and wax and pay the insurance and get it out again and buff and wax. Good trustees are constantly saying, okay, of everything God's entrusted to me, how can I create the best return possible out of what God has given? Because see, here's the reality. Eventually, it's all going to be returned. John D. Rockefeller was asked one time, John D., how much is enough? His answer was very fascinating. He said, enough is just a little bit more than what you currently have. See, enough is always just a little bit more than what I currently have. You know, John D. died, and somebody asked his attorney, he said, hey, how much did John D. leave behind? And his attorney said, he left all of it. He left it all. Because see, I've never seen a U-Haul following a hearse, not in my life. Never seen, you know, somebody's possessions going with them. And when you die, it all gets returned. And in case you haven't noticed, the one who dies with the most toys still dies, all right? Still dies. Last I checked, death rate was about 100%, give or take, 100%. It's the one thing all of us are certainly going to experience. But see, when you and I realize we have a limited time on this earth to use what we've been entrusted with to create a huge impact, it begins to change our perspective. We begin to see things differently. We begin to live in ways that we say, God, how can what you've entrusted to me bring you joy? How can it bring me more joy? You know, which transcends a few more digits in a bank account. It transcends a few more financial goals. So Jesus, he talks with this one person who had the one talent. And here's what he says to him. He says, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. So he plays according to the rules of the game, right? That's what you and I would do, right? If somebody gives you something, says, hey, this is important to me, what would you do? If somebody gave you their iPhone to use for a period of time while they're gone, you're like, man, I'm gonna protect it. I'm gonna put a case on it. I'm gonna make sure it doesn't lose its luster. I'm gonna make sure it doesn't get scratched. I'm gonna return it in its original condition. And so apparently this dude just played by the rules of the game, right? I'm going to return it the way that you gave it to me. He's like, hey, I did my duty. Here it is back exactly the way you gave it to me. And look at what God says back to him. He says, you wicked and slothful servant. You knew that I reaped where I had not sown and gathered where I scattered no seed. In other words, God's like, hey, of course I'll do whatever I want. Of course I'll harvest wherever I want. You know why? Because I own it all. It's all mine. He said, and you knew this, and yet you didn't leverage what I entrusted you. He then says, then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers. At least they would have given you like 0.04% interest in this economy or something like that. You know, he says, you should have invested my money with the bankers. And at my coming, I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. See, we have in our country this phrase that goes something like, you know, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, which you know, really is a sad picture of the way our country works right now. And, you know, because there's amazing opportunities. The more you have, there are amazing opportunities. There's amazing interest rates. You know, the more well-off you are, you get amazing rates. And that's just a sad kind of unjust statement of how the world works right now. But when we look at this story, in the kingdom that Jesus is communicating right here, there's also an aspect to this of how the kingdom works as well. See, God uniquely puts his resources places where he knows he's going to get the best return. And you and I would do the same thing, right? I mean, we have money managers working for us, managing our retirement to get the best possible return. And you know what he says to the one who just takes the easy route? You know what he says to the one who just kind of stores away, who's hoarding, burying what he's been entrusted with? He says, you wicked and lazy servant. See, the good and faithful always get a return. The wicked and the lazy, you know what they have? They always have an excuse. I didn't know. I thought you just wanted. I thought I'd just keep. I thought I'd store. There's always an excuse. See, the amazing thing here is Jesus doesn't call the pornographer wicked. He doesn't call those of us who don't separate our recyclables wicked, thank God. He didn't call people who don't vote like you wicked. But what does he say the wicked look like? He says, you're wicked if you're somebody who just takes what has been entrusted to you and you're lazy, you don't do anything with it, and you store it away and hide it, and bury it, and preserve it, and keep it. It says, you wicked, lazy servant. 6 years ago, our family went through this process where, same process, we started our very first campaign to build this place. And our family went through a process where we put everything on the table. And one of the things that God, you know, said, hey, I want to redistribute that, among other things, there's some other things as well, but one of them was our cable television. And that was about $120 a month that God said, hey, I want you to do something differently with this. And so we said, okay, we're going to get rid of cable and turn that into kingdom initiatives to prepare a place for people to come and experience Jesus, known as the Crosspoint Launchpad. And we talked to our kids about this, and it was a really interesting conversation. They were bummed. I mean, they were losing Disney Channel, and we were bummed too. We're like, man, our kids are going to be freaks. They're not going to know Hannah Montana. They're not going to know Good Luck Charlie. So we downsized to Netflix, and it's crazy. They still know all those people, all right? But we gave up the cable bill. And yet, the coolest thing that happened through that process is, you know, every time we would drive by this site as the steel was going up on this building, our kids would say to Julie and I, they'd say, hey, Mom and Dad, now we still don't have cable because we're taking that money to give to Crosspoint so that other people can come to see Jesus there, right? Yeah, that's right. That's right. Oh, good, good. See, they got this. See, this is what we're doing. We realize there's so many people around us that are in a spiritual deficit that we need to continue to expand what we're doing here to continue to create spiritual freedom. I mean, some of you know this. Some of you are sitting here because when you came into this place, you were broken. Your marriage was broken. You were in an addiction. You were depressed. Maybe some of you walked in here, you know, life was just going exactly the way you planned on it, and yet there was no joy. There was no peace in your life. But there were a handful of people who came after you to bless you and invested in raising a place like this so that you could walk in, so you could bring your friends and neighbors, so that you could come into this place. This is why with this initiative, as always will be the case, the preponderance of what we're doing is going to go right here into investing into our neighbors, the people right around us, and creating more avenues for people to get out of their spiritual bondage. It always will be geared right here, even though we're doing other initiatives. And one of the coolest things in that process for us was my kids got this. Because every time they'd say, now, is this still what we're doing? We'd say, yeah, that's what we're doing. They'd smile. Because one of the things they realize is there's a joy that comes in the surrender. There's a joy. When we put everything on the table and respond to God, there's a joy. Now, the guy who had the one talent, there was no joy in his life as he was burying it. There was no joy when the master returned. The one who got two, the one that got five, I mean, there's great joy. In fact, the master said, come and enjoy the master's happiness. So there's a joy in surrender. I want us to go to school this morning before we wrap up on somebody who's walked this path. In fact, a couple who's kind of gone down this path for us that often sits among us. And I want you to listen to the process they went through as they came into this place and then said, hey, we want to now go through the tough process of saying, God, what's our next step in providing this for others? So take a listen to the story.
8 years ago, our lives were a lot different than they are today. We had, Leela and I weren't together. I was going through a pretty turbulent divorce and actually found myself fighting for custody of my son, Zachary. And life was much different than what I had thought it would be and hoped it would be. I ended up meeting Leela. We started dating and talking, and Leela made it clear that her marriage, her future was going to be focused on God. And that was a big change for both of us because I was really interested, but at the same time, that wasn't where our lives were at the time. So we had a lot of growing to do, but quickly we started going to church together, and we found a local church here in the Indianapolis area that we liked, and met a few people that we felt like we were really starting to fit in. And before long, people got to know us too, and the word got out, I guess, that we were together, but we weren't married yet at the time, so we were living together out of wedlock. And as much as we knew that wasn't God's plan for us and our goal, it's where our situation had put us. And so to make a long story short, we were basically asked to leave the church. And at the time, with everything we had been through, especially myself, that was probably about as low of a blow I think I could have experienced, because I wasn't just asked to leave a church. We really felt rejected by the church and God too, really. we ended up coming to Cross Point and showing up and sat in the back row for several weeks before we ever even really let anybody know we were around, and had conversations about not filling out a connection card because we didn't want to get thrown out of another church. Coming out of a very low place or dark place in your life, reaching for hope or for love or looking to God was difficult. I found myself a lot of times actually pushing the other direction and challenging things that now I would buy into much quicker because I was scared. It was really fear-based. I lived thinking things would work out one way, and it turned out that God had a different plan for me, which is much better down the road looking back. But it's really complicated and difficult to let yourself really give in to the idea that I'm not in charge, that God has a plan for me, and I need to find a place to be a part of and live that out and really try to make a difference.
To surrender, that's a tough one for me. I like to have control of everything and anything, so just kind of really giving it all to God, the good, the bad, the ugly, the great, the praises, the needs. It's just difficult for me because I have to then wait for his response and then wait for answers that I may not want. So surrendering with some of my past, some of my family relationships, and letting God take control of those, letting God can take control of our marriage, the difficulties of trying to have a baby, and just, you know, all the things that life comes about, I learned from Cross Point that I need to pray about these things. I need to turn to God.
Leela's a little better with this surrender idea than I am. I remember after attending our vision briefing last time, where we got together with a small group of people and you presented the idea of building a launch pad, and driving home and talking about it. What did you think? This is pretty cool. Let's need to be a part of this. Yeah, how much are you thinking we should give or try to commit? And I gave a number, and then Leela responded and said, really? I think it might be much different than that. And really challenging me to just think differently. So we went through a tough process of attending and talking through it and praying, and that surrender word, it kept coming up over and over. And as we continued to work through things, it became evident that some of the financial pieces that we had previously thought would go to other things were going to be available to help out with our commitment to the last campaign. And initially it was scary to think, well, but what about these other things that we thought we were going to do? And as we talked just in the last week, we've kind of rehashed the fact that all of those things got taken care of without us even needing to worry about it. How it all worked, we're not sure, but we surrendered and we lived with hope and faith that it was going to be okay.
So trusting in God just fully with every area of my life really grew during the last campaign. I'm a giver naturally by heart, thank goodness. Doing things that are going to stretch me and grow me. Like I've signed up for a mission trip to go to Haiti, and just being a little more brave. The last campaign was really a blessing in growing all of those things in my life. I'm now a mom after removing all of the doubts and just not believing that was ever going to happen. It's really exciting to see what the next campaign's going to do in terms of growing us spiritually, in terms of growing just different areas of our family life, and what we are going to be able to do in the community. It's just a lot of exciting things that Cross Point's doing, so it's pretty neat.
You know, this is all good, this whole idea of beginning to recognize everything that needs to be on the table, but there's actually an entirely different place we need to go. So let's stand. We're going to stand to our feet. And as we do this, you know, where we need to go is not just standing here, but where we need to go is actually saying, God, what does it look like for me to put my whole self on the table? You know, I mean, it's great to have our stuff, but God, I want to consecrate the entirety of who I am and put it on the table. And you know, the reason you're here this morning, I mean, the reason all of us are here in this place is because, you know, 2,000 years ago, there was a group of 12 individuals, a team of 12 with Jesus who put everything that they had in front of them, all their hopes, dreams, their goals on the table and said, God, you know, it's all yours. In fact, it's actually just 11 of them. Judas bailed. So 11 of the 12 said, hey, we're going to put everything on the table. And there's been a wave of love that's been rolling through the globe ever since. And in fact, many of us are here because of that. And we're here today because 11 plus Jesus said, hey, we're going to put the entirety of ourselves on the table. Tell you what, of the 800,000 people who call Crosspoint their home, if 400 of us said, you know what, I'm going to get on the table. My whole self on the table, game over. Some of the things God's calling us to have more redemptive impact in our community, game over. It happened right away. If a third of us said, hey, I'm gonna put the entirety of my life on the table. See, this is what it means to consecrate your life, all right? The giving will come later, right? March 13th, that's when we're giving, that's when we're making our commitments. But first, it starts and it ends with surrender. And I know for some of us here today, you're looking at this table, you've been looking at it all morning, you're thinking, man, there's no way, there's no stinking way I'm getting close to that table. It's not for me. There's others of us this morning who you're saying, you know what, yeah, I want to begin to live that way. I want to begin to live a consecrated life, totally open before God. There's others of us who you've been on the table and you've chose to step off the table. You're like, man, the cost is too high. I want my life my way. And then there's others of us who you're getting, even this morning as we're talking, you're getting on the table. You're saying, God, I want my life to be fully consecrated, open-handed. God, whatever you want to send my way, great. If you need to take something, great. I just want to be open before you. And I want to pray for you this morning. God, draw us closer to you, even right now. Now, this journey is not one of perfection. It's a journey of getting on the table. God, I pray that you help us to see that the ways of the world are a stark contrast to the ways of the kingdom. And we begin to see that, God, you have given us much. And that we're to be trustees of that. Man, that's a game changer. God, help us to get there. God, for some of us right now, we may want to put our hands out in front of us, palms up. It's just a sign of saying, God, even right now, I'm taking on a posture of surrender. My hands are open before you. God, if you want to bring more grace to flow through my life and flow into other people's lives, I am ready. I'm in a posture to receive that. God, if you just want to bring more grace into my life, that would be awesome. God, if there's more resources you want to bring into my life, my hands are ready to receive. God, if there's trials that you want to bring my way, okay, I'll receive those as well because I'm in a posture of surrender. God, I just pray that you would help us to live light and free. And God, may this be a place, may Crosspoint be a place with not more people in the seats, but with more and more people increasingly saying, okay, I'm going to step up onto the table. God, help us to do that. Help us to do that. Amen. Amen. Well, hey, we're in a journey. And we're growing you. We're putting all kinds of things in front of you. You've got personal guide prompts in the app this week. Get into your small group. There's a vision briefing here in about 20 minutes. You know, there's this first Wednesday, if you want to go to the next level. These are things to grow us and to help us get to that point of March 13th where we do what God is calling us to do. So the journey continues. We're going to sing. PJ's going to lead us in one closing song and just allow God to kind of insert some bravery and encourage into us this week. So let's do that.